welcome to the first episode of Lawyer to Layman.
Can't wait. I've been waiting for this for so long, Chase.
Well, this is going to be a show where two of the smartest hillbillies in Georgia went to law school, and we're going to talk about and demystify the law for all the laymen out there. And by the end of it, hopefully, you'll be a little bit more educated about what your rights are and what the law is and sort of what it does for the average everyday person. But starting out, this is the end of the week, and we're going to celebrate the end of the week, getting through, and enjoy a incredible beverage to start to relax. Reed, could you tell us a little bit about the vintage that we're about to enjoy?
This is an Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
I've tried a lot of these.
It's German. German.
Yeah, it was processed in America for a while, but not anymore. Mm. Now, this is a special one. This is a 97, spring of 97. So I've been saving this one for the first broadcast. I have some late 97s that are good. Spring of 97 is the best. Oh. So without further ado, my friend.
Yes, that's right.
Cheers.
And for all those AMSR people out there, we're going to get close to the mic for you. Oh.
Yep. That's the real deal. You taste those hops?
Fantastic.
Those nodes of garlic in there. Is that garlic?
I'm getting rubber hose, personally. But
it brings me back to drinking out of the hose pipe when I was a kid. And you know, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Straight out of the can.
Yeah. Either way, it's delicious. I'm enjoying it a lot. So, let's kind of get into it a little bit. I think one of the segments we're going to do is that we're actually going to play some clips and sort of comment on what we see as a problem. Because I don't know about you, but one of my sort of revelations after going to law school was that after I had my torts class, I saw torts everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
We talk about torts. What are we talking about?
Oh, I mean, well, I'm same as you. I am just littered with now in my brain of just everywhere I go seeing hazards, because I do premise liability a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So torts is essentially something that somebody did to you that got you hurt. That's the simplest way you can say it.
Right.
And so we're going to try, like Chase is saying, to not only do what the law is, but break it down into common sense hillbilly terms.
Right. Exactly. So like if you should have covered a hole in your yard and you didn't, and you invited everybody over for a barbecue, it's dark in your backyard, somebody falls, that's a tort.
I was at Joe Bonamassa. Is that how you say it?
I'm not sure.
A guitar player. Mm-hmm. My wife's father loves him, and so we went to watch it. And I was sitting there, and five different people tripped over the step, over the same step.
Right.
And it was dark, but so if five people are tripping over it, I called the owner and told him. I was like, listen, you know,
there's something
about this step. I'm putting you on notice,
right?
Because something's wrong,
right? And then eventually, I mean, five people step there. They're athletic, they're young, whatever. But eventually, somebody's grandmother, that can't take a broken hip,
exactly,
is going to try and hit that step, and maybe it's 2 inches higher than every other step,
right?
And so the body, I don't know if people know this, but it naturally takes.
How I got to watching it, to be totally honest, is I tripped first. So, but I caught myself.
Easy to notice. let's go ahead and sort of start with the first clip. Chuck, if you could, please bring up the first one. See what you think, Reed. Tell me what you see here.
There's a lot going on here. Get him. Well, all right. He's filming and kicking. That's talent.
So I think what the issue is here is that's the property owner there and the farm equipment. And the gentleman kicking the farm equipment is the car owner.
Yeah. My first question is why didn't he have a shirt on? But that's besides the point. So there's a lot of different issues here. And you could argue both sides. So there's some criminal aspects. But I think we're going to talk about the civil side of this. If you have car issues and if you're just sitting there, well, regardless, if your car breaks down or if you just want to look at the view, you are infringing upon somebody's rights and you're on their property, but that doesn't give them the right to act in a manner like this, meaning that they're exercising some very strange behavior. And you can tell them to get off, but you have to allow the person to mitigate the issue. Mitigating means essentially fixing or resolving the problem. So if he's saying, hey man, your car's broke down, you need to get it moved, and the guy's called a tow truck, he's waiting or whatever, you need to let him remove the car. Right. If the car's not broke down and he doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want you on his property and says you need to move, you got to tell him that. You can't go get a forklift and drag his car out to the middle of the road, even though you have the right as a landowner.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on it. But this, the reason why we put this clip on there and put this in front of you is so we can talk about something called self-help.
Okay.
You know, it's just like when you have a legal issue, in this case, this property owner had a person blocking the ingress and egress of his land. He was actually trespassing on his land the way he had his car. He had a legal right to actually do something about that issue.
I agree
with
that.
But he didn't do what the law allows him to do. And in that situation, because of the way he did it, there's going to be multiple claims there. Like you said, you know, in that situation, saying, hey, buddy, let's put it in neutral.
Right.
And let's move it down the road. Or when can you get the tow truck here?
Right. He went from A to Z, not right. A to B.
Yeah, he went from 0 to 10. From 0 to 10.
And we've both done that.
Yeah, we have. Most people have.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like you
said, it keeps us in business.
That's right.
That's right.
You may have the right to do something, but your rights, I think my dad had told me something, your rights end where the next person's rights begin. Yeah. And there's a lot of sense to that if you think about it. Yeah. You can protect your land. You can protect your egress and all that stuff, but you have to do it in the proper way.
Right. And there's always like this idea of proportionality. In other words, your response to whatever
proportionality, folks.
Yeah.
For people like me, means just like different levels of
different levels of
extremism. Different levels of action. It could be strong action, small action, whatever. But right. Go ahead, Chase.
So if Reed pushes me, it is proportional for me to come back and push Reed.
I agree.
Okay.
But it's not proportional for you to shoot me in the head with a gun.
That's right. That's all I mean.
Okay.
This gentleman blocked his driveway, and it would have been proportional had he used his farm equipment to gently move that vehicle across the road.
Sure.
But instead, he
did no damage to the vehicle.
Yeah. Instead, he decided to flip it over and rake it across the pavement for about 25, 30 yards.
How do you feel about the kick? What if that damaged that forklift?
I think it's going to be forgiven under that those circumstances.
Probably.
And if we had an estimate done on the damage to the car and the farm equipment, I think that they would come out.
I think
the
judge
would
offset it just to save face, but it would be
minimal.
Very minimal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's it for that one.
Yeah. Chuck. Roll that beautiful bean footage.
A bunch of cars. All right. So this is something we don't experience in the South.
This is going to be difficult for me. Mm.
So it looks as if we have a snow plow that is on the other side of the road and has caused, it seems to be collision or an accident on the other side. What are some of the issues we see here?
So the first thing I see is it depends on who's coming to my office. But if the driver of the little vehicle comes to my office, first thing I'm seeing is if you got, and I don't like I said, I don't know anything about snow, nothing. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you if you're throwing snow across into moving traffic, that's probably a no-no.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty positive that you can move that maneuver to the other side where there's no traffic going on, and the state is going to be liable. Now, if you sue the state, then you got some issues because you're going to have to send notices and ad litem notices, and some of them are 6 months, some are 12 months, and that's when the law really comes into play. But as far as just looking at it, going, who's at fault, what's going on, what should be done, what should not be done, and the words of the famous Vic Hawk law, this don't smell right.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's right.
The guy should not be driving the snowmobile, throwing snow into the oncoming traffic where they can't see, have no notice that it's going to happen. If you're going to do that, you're going to have to stop the road, clear the traffic, not let any vehicles come on the road. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you're going to have to clear that road. Essentially, you're just throwing snow from one side of the road to the other side of the road.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty easy one to say the state or whoever responsible driving. For the driving that thing is going to be at fault. How about you?
That's right. That's exactly why I put it in there, just so you would talk about the state.
Ah.
Yeah. That's, and the difficulty, we were going to talk a little bit about, you saw how he went to lawyer first, started talking about anti-litem and stuff like that.
Right?
Now, nobody knows what anti-litem is, but these are special requirements that you have to actually send the state, because the state does so much.
Well, they have immunity so
much. Right. Well, the reason why they have immunity is because they do so much in our society. And you can't ask them to monitor every inch of sidewalk. If you did, ask them to monitor every inch of sidewalk and be responsible for every little mistake that they made, the state would go bankrupt overnight just because of how much they do in our community, in our world to provide for us. And so what we do is we provide immunity for them, except for what's called gross negligence. Gross negligence is probably what you just saw.
Yeah.
You know, you have a 5-lane highway and you have a snow plow that knows exactly what happens right. when he hits that snow.
Well, and he's been riding. And who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. He knows exactly what's going to happen. There's tons of cars on the other side of the road, and he knows these people are driving, and it's going to be dangerous if something happens. And they can't see when that kind of, and these, it looked like it was heavy, like ice and sludge hitting these people, and exactly what you thought would happen, happened.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of case that you can actually pursue against the state. When they make regular mistakes, the state, you know, they should have, they should have cut a route that you know, is peeking out of a sidewalk, you know, and they didn't. That's you're not going to be able to pursue the state for something like, that.
And some things against the state that, you know, that I disagree with the law. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to abide by the law, so I do. But some of the things that they get immunity to is just insanity to me.
Right.
You know, school systems.
Right.
I mean, I have two young children. They can be negligent at all get out and have broken arms, punctured lungs, and there's no recourse.
Right.
And I find that to not really be in line with what our system is set up to do, but the lawmakers have made it that way, and that's the way it is. So if you're going to pursue something against a state entity, you better have some serious action.
Yeah, or a really, really good lawyer. Yeah. I successfully sued the school district.
I mean, I have two, Chase. In South Carolina, we had one that they had it filmed where they had a slip and fall in the entryway, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this woman fell. Come to find out that they had made video. It was so commonplace that they had saved videos throughout the year. And every Christmas party, they would play it for the staff of everybody who came in and fell.
Wow.
And the judge still upheld the immunity.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking about.
Whoa.
If that was me or our business or any business you go into,
wow.
and you had 10 falls, and not only the falls, but we film it and laugh at it.
Right, right. Man.
That would be
devastating if you can get to it before a jury.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that right there, one of the points that we're sort of hitting on why that's important to us is we're talking about notice. You know, anytime you have a premises liability issue, the person has to know that issue is on their property and have not done anything about it. And you either have to have actual knowledge or what they call constructive knowledge, where they basically should have known about it, right?
Yep.
So, like, you can't just
Prior acts, you can't
just go and ignore your property, ignore areas of your property, and just say, you know, turn a blind eye to everything, and people get hurt there all the time and not do anything about it. But in that situation, I mean, if you're making, you know, highlight reels.
They're my highlight reels.
Yeah, of falls, I think you're on notice.
Yeah.
So
that's where I disagree with the law of the state immunity. But, you know, what am I going to do about it?
Well, vote.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's about all we can do.
Yeah.
All right, we got another one.
Johnny, run that beautiful bean footage. Whack.
Okay.
All right, that's two. Two
hits. And three. Okay.
The knockout blow.
I love these videos, by the way. These people that hide and they like act like they're bushes and stuff.
Yeah. Chase, I've started on. You start this one off. I got some interesting.
Yeah.
Things.
All right. All right. We're talking about crime here. All right. First of all, let's take a minute to talk about the criminal aspects and the civil aspects. All right. So anytime there's always two separate sort of forms of the law.
So I think it's very important. I don't think many, even people who. Or that I've talked to that are paralegals don't understand that there's civil and criminal.
Right.
So explain it for us.
So anytime there's a behavior that's like this, kind of intentional, even when it's non-intentional, you can do it. But most of the time it's intentional acts where a person does something that's actually against the law. In this case, you can't just go around hitting people, okay? That's called battery, right? When you actually make a motion that makes somebody in fear of bodily harm, that's called assault, okay? If it's reasonable for them to fear that they're about to be hit, excuse me.
That
97.
1997 hit. It might have been a mid-90s. I thought it was spring, but yeah. We'll see.
Well, those are crimes, and you can actually, you know, you can be prosecuted for the crime. The person that does that and actually prosecutes you and puts you in jail is going to be the district attorney, the solicitor. They work for the government, okay? And the way that they punish you is they either fine you or they put you in jail, okay? But usually in these situations, there's also an actual civil element. In civil law, what we do is we sue people for money damages. So in that situation, had that either one of these people had medical bills associated with the hits that they have, you can recover from the other side if what they did was unreasonable, unlawful under those circumstances. The issue in most cases for us, and this is one of the practical areas that you law students out there are going to learn about, is that who pays?
Yep.
And how to recover. Because for the most part, most Americans, 80% of Americans don't have $400 in savings. So if you sue them, you know, their house is going to be protected in bankruptcy. Most of them don't have assets. And so the only way usually you get paid is the insurance companies. They make about $2.4 trillion in profit every year. So we're not really worried about them. They can hand over a little bit more money. They can pay our paralegals. They can pay us and pay the people for their injuries. And in this situation, we've got a crime, okay? Number one, the original person that came up and slapped the man that slapped the Bushman, the person pushing the cart slapped the Bushman. He's not entitled to come in and start slapping somebody just for no reason, okay? Yeah. He did not appear to be scared or freak out. If you just react, like, automatically somebody jumps out at you.
That's why I said the second hit. That was important to me.
So, yeah, I think that what he did was unreasonable. Now, the second gentleman, okay, he was not in danger.
Right.
He was mad.
Yeah,
he was upset about that.
Yeah.
That one is completely not allowed. Yeah, you could be prosecuted for that civilly. If I had to choose between whose case I'm taking, I'm taking the gentleman that walked by him with the cart.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, the Bushman, he's got some issues. So, number one, and I don't think it happened in this case, but you can have intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he's creating the situation that
for
calls
people to be scared.
Right. So he's creating a situation where you have to foresee that you're going to
scare people,
and they might react in a negative way.
That's why he's doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the first, I would even go as far on this one, to say, Bushman, after the first lick, you got to take that one. The second lick, that's not allowed.
Yeah.
But then his retaliation to it is too extreme.
Yeah, a proportionality again.
So, I mean, essentially he was mad because he's a man and he got slapped.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yep.
There's not a lot. I'd rather get punched than slapped as a man.
Oh, okay.
And so I take that. I think the Bushman, you know, maybe he's an old Southern jerk like myself. Yeah. And he just didn't take kindly to getting slapped. If you're going to hit me, go ahead and hit me. Yeah.
Some people pay a lot of money for that.
I get it for free. I agree with you. If there was actual debt, I think either person could recover if there was actually some true damage done. So if the punch from the Bushman broke his jawbone, I think there could be some action. And then I think also if the second lick from the non-Bushman hurt the Bushman, I think you could recover for him.
Yeah.
But then it always goes back in our world, when you're talking about real world law, is how can you recover? You can get a verdict for $10 million, and it's not worth the paper it was written on.
That's right.
I think we had a case, it was, $17 million something recovered, and then after we got it back through bankruptcy and all this stuff, our payment was $17.
Yep.
And so we have that framed in the office
because
it really wasn't worth cashing the $17.
Right, and it was a reminder for us to focus on recoverability when it comes to assessing cases and case value. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, too, is, and the way I try to explain it to them is they come to us with a claim like this, and
there's a legit action.
There's a legitimate claim there, right? Yep. But I explain to them, it'd be the equivalent is if you came to me and said, I have a piece of gold on my land and it's 10 feet down, or we'll say 100 feet down in the ground, and it's worth $100, right?
Yep.
Well, it's going to take 10 men, a drilling machine, and
dynamite,
and $15,000 right. to go down there and get that piece of gold. Yeah. So do you really think it's a good idea for us to go and do it? And that's a situation there where we got a guy that got, you know, he's probably got a fat lip, black eye, something like right. that. Unless he had a broke nose and had to be rushed to the hospital because blood went in his lungs and has a huge bill, it's not going to be worth pursuing. Yeah. And there's a practical and a side to the law that people don't necessarily take into account.
And it goes in every aspect. Cars, car accidents.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect example. You have people that die. Mm-hmm. That receive $25,000.
Yep.
And that's it. And the reason for that is that's all that the insurance has available. And if you go after the person, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. you're going to get nothing. You're going to get zero. So your choices are either you have a dead loved one, mm-hmm. but your choices are either take the $25,000, which doesn't recover for that loss at all.
Not a chance.
Not even close. Or go through litigation, sue the person individually, and you end up with zero.
Yeah, you go through 5 years of bankruptcy and spend $3,000 going after one.
Yep, and that's what they don't teach you in law school is the practicality of it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of law that I don't know, mm-hmm. but I can tell you if it's going to make money or not.
Yep,
and that's the truth.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's usually an elective course in law school.
Not just money for the lawyer; it's money for the client. You're doing your client a disservice. By taking a case that's not going to end up with them receiving some kind of benefit.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense for anybody.
Yeah, because they don't necessarily understand the dollars and cents of it and the sort of, because believe it or not, like these issues have been thought about for hundreds and hundreds of years and these principles and ideas. And people have thought about them for a long time. And they've, there's a reason why. You know, most of the Congress is made up of people that have gone to law school.
Right.
Because they know and understand the importance of it, and they know and understand how it can affect the lives of everyday people.
I'd put it this way, Chase. When you first started law school, it probably took you, God knows how long, I know it did me, to just read a case, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have to read every single word. Mm-hmm. It's not a novel that you can speed read and still get the gist of it. So every word could change the entire complexity of what it means. Shall versus should can change the law in that one word.
Yeah.
And agree or disagree, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. While Bill Clinton was on trial or whatever, and he kept saying, well, what is the definition of is?
Right?
And it is silly, but there's some truth to that. Mm-hmm. As a lawyer, you have to go, I have to understand every single word or I'm screwed.
Yep.
You do.
Yep. And one of the most eye-opening things I ever read in law school was a secondary sort of materials, like a explanation of the basis of statutory construction.
Mm.
And it helped me to read statutes better. Yes. And that made a huge difference, like the importance of and versus or.
Right.
So when you're talking about the things that have to be in place before you can recover in a particular action, and the word is or, then you only need one of those things.
Right.
If it says and.
But it may be in. Yeah. It may be in a 10-paragraph list.
Right, right. But you miss the and the, or the or. If it says or, it can be any one of them. If it says this and this and this, it has to have all of them.
Right.
You don't have to have all the elements. And so, you know, being careful about the way you read those things can change everything for your client, for you. Mm-hmm. So.
And there's been lawsuit after lawsuit on single words of a statute.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It's crazy.
What's the next one, Bobby?
Bobby, roll that.
Oh, okay. So this is
interesting.
This is a premises liability case.
I'm all over this.
Okay. Well, what are we seeing here?
You go first, because I think your opinion is going to differ from mine.
All right. Well, we got a premises liability issue here. All right. And the issue is this mirror, what appears to be a mirror, a piece of glass. I imagine that's a mirror. And this little boy's kicking a basketball into it. So the store here is going to have a responsibility in order to basically install this mirror in a way in which it's not going to fall over like this, right? Well, maybe they have. Because they didn't anticipate the fact that there's going to be a young child there kicking an item into it. But, the store owners would have to anticipate someone might bump into it. They might hit it, or you know, something to that effect, right? But it appears here that he's hit it once. I don't know if he's hit it more than once. Yeah, I think
he hit it twice.
Yeah, well, did he?
Yeah.
Okay, well, one of the, in these situations, you'll always look for more than one person to be responsible. And I'll explain why I learned this the hard way, where here you might compare the negligence of the store owner to that of the parents who are not monitoring their child, who are a little ways away. They can see or hear that the child is playing with a ball that probably they don't own, and they're kicking it against a mirror. You know, this is not something that most reasonable people would just sort of allow their child to do. And so there's going to be a level of comparative negligence here. Yeah. And the other issue I see, though, is that we're likely to have a corporation versus a little boy.
Yep.
And so that practical reality may change the equation. So the fact that the parents might be 50% responsible here is going to be outweighed by the emotional, if the child has cuts on their face.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be outweighed, but they're not going to care about Foot Locker or whoever this is. I have no idea what the name of the business is, but they're not going to care about the corporation. They make enough money on shoes. Give the kids some money. So I would take that case any day of the week under those circumstances.
I agree with you on the 99% of it. And there's one thing I think that you have to take into account in premise liability, especially in this case, and I absolutely would take it. As a parent, you know, the kid bounces it once, bounces it twice. Yeah, he should. But he's the key to it to me is where are they? Mm-hmm. They're in a sports store.
Yeah, yeah.
They sell basketballs.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So it is foreseeable.
They got kids in there.
You're enticing kids. That's your market. Yeah. You want them to come in there. You want them to pick up the ball because then mom and daddy gonna buy it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would bet you that where they have the balls located is near that child height.
Yeah,
and they can get it, and they can play with it, and they want them to. Then they're blown up. Why wouldn't you sell a ball deflated if you didn't want it to be bounced, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
so the kid's bouncing, he's playing it. And also, if you look here, where is this person? Where is this person? There's nobody watching to see what's going on in the store. Mm-hmm. Where are the cameras at? And this on the backside, I'm no master of construction, but I've done my fair share. All that is a little... essentially super glue. I mean, that's basically what
construction
it is.
It's
construction caulk, and it's not in a zigzag motion at all.
Right.
And so that's going to have a stronger hold than just putting 4 or 5 dots on it. And so I would bring in my buddy Chad Coxville to explain, when you adhere something, it doesn't have to be, you don't put dot, dot, dot. What's the common practice for this?
Right.
So then... you're talking about who you're bringing in. So now you got the store. They're not keeping a close lookout. That's number one. Who installed it? The store owners didn't install that. Mm-hmm. People at the mall or wherever this is installed that.
Right.
So then you got to bring them in.
Right.
So this brings me to the next topic is statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
We deal with this all the time. Mm-hmm. You have to know who you're suing before you can even start.
Right.
So this, you might not get a case for a year. They might not come in. They might not even think they have a case for a year.
Right.
Or the damages may not really show themselves for an extended period of time. So a case may come in the office and we say, all right, well, we only got 6 months for the statute. And to the normal person, say 6 months, plenty of time.
Right.
Well, you got to investigate it, figure out who to sue. Whoever built this store may be under 5 different LLCs.
And if
you don't sue the right one, you're done.
It's out.
You know, and if you, it's called the empty chair syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sue the store and not the person who actually built it. Then the store owner is going to go, they know that the jury's not going to look at the family.
Right.
So they're going to go, you don't even have the guy who built it. We're not responsible. You didn't even put him there.
Right.
So that's the empty chair. You got to have all the chairs filled.
Right.
And so for me on this case, I would bring an action against the store itself and whoever installed that mirror. And then a jury will look at it as three parts: parent, installer, and store.
Right.
And so then I think you even go, even if they say, they go, you know, we're lazy, we'll do a third.
Right.
You got 2/3 of the proportion right there.
That's right. So yeah, so you got more bad, like this is the bad side, this is the good side. Right.
More
this is
bad
the victim.
People.
There's more bad people, so there's, you don't have to do one or the other.
Right.
You don't have to put any less on the parent. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And who knows, this might have been up there for 5 years.
Right.
And the store owner, I don't have any idea who this was built.
The Loctite glue may only be It says it replace every four.
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff you got to look at. That's you know, when you just see the clip.
Yeah.
And that's to start the show, we were talking about, we just see danger everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the kind of stuff I see. Mm-hmm. Like right there, the dots, I just go, well, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's not.
I just remember
the frame on it? Where's the secure little hooks on the... How is it? Yeah.
Why isn't it screwed down?
Right.
Well, I remember it was like that movie, The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I see torch everywhere.
Yes, I see torch everywhere. That's right.
Yeah, but and the other issue I see in this is I'm looking at the kid and how old he is. Mm-hmm. So let's assume this isn't a mirror. Okay, this is like a block, a piece of wood, a foundational post or whatever that he kicks it against. And somehow it falls over and hits him and he has a traumatic brain injury. So in those situations, you know, we're going to have a different statute of limitations. You know, the parents in Georgia, I know at least, you know, the parents are going to have 2 years to actually bring a claim for the medical bills, right? But the kid has until the age of majority.
2 years after the age of majority.
2 years after. Yeah, it starts running after he turns 18. And so he's going to have a little extra time. The issue, mm-hmm, again becomes, though, you know, we got a store owner. We know who that is. We don't know who built it.
Right.
So if you take that and you wait 18 years to start investigating who built and installed that mirror,
good luck.
Yeah, you're not going to have the record. So sometimes practicality, you know, makes us do things that we wouldn't have to do if we could just count on everybody to save records for 45 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So. All right. I think we're done with that one. We got another one? Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's see if we can get a replay on that one. So what happens here is we got a security guard, and he's actually defending this property. He's securing this property. And he's got kids that are using this little stairwell in order to do their tricks.
Right.
Well, what he does...
Are they on skateboard?
They're on a skateboard, right? And so what he does is he sees them going towards the edge. He's trying to tell them to stop. Then he goes and sticks his foot out, stops the skateboard, and the kid goes flying.
There we go.
Look at him.
Yeah.
Right? Now he's hurt his chest. He's hurt his arm. So what have we got here?
I mean, that's you just can't do that kind of stuff. It goes to the sticking in the spokes of a bicycle.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a right to get the person out, but mm-hmm, you also have to leave them in the same way. If they're not resisting or anything like that, you can't hurt somebody to get them out. It kind of reminds me of the traps that you learn in law school. You remember traps, where if somebody, you know, comes onto your property and you've built a booby trap that shoots them with a shotgun, you're going to be held responsible because it's not the same level. You know?
Right, not proportional to the response.
I was trying not to say it. You wanted me to.
I'm going to say it every time.
Dog, you wanted me to.
They're going
to
learn.
Around it. So it just, the security guard was just mad. Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't really doing his job at that point, mm-hmm, in my opinion. He was just mad. He had told them they're bratty kids and I'm a stubborn old adult.
Right, they're not listening.
Just get the hell out of here.
Right, right.
And so it would, to me, that looks the same as if he'd have just grabbed him by the collar and thrown him down the stairs.
Right. So he could have just grabbed him and left him at the top of the stairs.
Yeah. I mean, you can almost take the skateboard out of it to me. I look at it for civilly, that he just chunked the dude down. He knew what was going to happen.
Exactly. He was planning on it.
What he wanted to happen.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you agree?
Well, 100%. So in that situation, that whoever the security guard, if that kid broke his arm, broke his rib, was hurt bad, paralyzed, whatever, I'm holding the security guard personally liable, okay, if he's got any sort of professional liability insurance, holding the company.
Probably not.
The insurance company that covers the security, if there's an independent company that's doing the security, and then whoever owns the building who he's working for. I mean, that is...
We got to find out what his history is.
Right.
Has he done this before? History?
Yeah. Has he done it before?
When you hired him, what was your practices of hiring this guy? Mm-hmm. Should you have known that he had a dangerous history?
Right. I mean, that brings me to another point. It's like, we talk about suing insurance companies and businesses and whatever, and I am not interested in putting any business out of practice.
Not. Okay,
at all. I'm not interested in putting doctors out of practice. I'm interested in putting people out of practice that aren't doing their jobs properly and that are routinely hurting people. Okay, yeah. If you make a mistake and you don't follow up on your driver or your security guard that's actually, you know, doing things that are just, you know, you treating 12-year-olds like this is ridiculous, right? If you make a mistake once,
But then you let him keep doing this kind of stuff. Yeah. Don't punish him. Don't send him home. Don't reprimand him. And he does this kind of stuff again. Well, then maybe you need a hit hard enough to where you need to start rethinking your business model and upping your insurance premiums and getting some different security in your place. Because that kind of stuff right there, that kid could have, I mean, you see it every day, could have died.
Yes,
absolutely. You, I mean, if you hit your head on concrete from 6 feet up.
We see traumatic brain injuries all the time.
And they don't necessarily die.
Right.
And sometimes dying is a better alternative, right? And that kind of situation I have no toleration for whatsoever, because that older man should have known the risk, number one, and he was doing it to a kid. And he didn't like being disrespected, but it's not enough for you to go and do something like that. Throw him off some stairs.
And I'm sure he's a bratty kid. I'm sure he's mad.
He's a jerk, probably.
I get mad. You know, I'm in the car. And, I'm an old man with a gray beard, redneck, and, you know, they flick me off, and I want to go fight them. But, you can't. You can't, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what our wives tell us, at least.
Because I think we forget about the fact that we were the 12-year-old kid.
Absolutely.
Flipping off the old man.
What was it Jordan Peterson said? Don't ever mess with a kid on a skateboard. Let kids on skateboards alone or something.
You have to let kids do things that are dangerous carefully.
Yeah.
You have to let them express that sort of
impulse. And if they were there doing it every day, all the time, then you call the police, then get them out of there. That's fine.
Yeah, the response has to be proportional. Like, if he were to grab the kid, he's good.
Yeah.
Right?
Grab him. Let the skateboard bust down the stairs. That's fine.
Right.
But you can't. If you're going to choose the person or the object, choose the person.
Please.
Not the object.
Please, security guard. Yeah.
Is that it for the first one, man?
I think that's it. Cheers.
Mine's already gone.
Oh, my God.
And that's why I have to end.
All right. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the first episode of Layman to Lawyer. Many more to come. Hopefully, we can keep educating and having fun doing this.
And we're going to bring on some special guests and tell some more stories from in the courtroom and maybe bring on some people that aren't lawyers and let's test their ability. Maybe our wives and that they should be listening to us all this time. Let's see what they think about some of these clips.
Mine's going to think she knows everything. I know. Love of God. Think the law is wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well,
thank you.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.